So you guys are still awake, right? Because we've had lunch now and it's hitting that time in the afternoon. This is the rough session where I have to keep you awake. So we'll try to keep it moving and try to keep it interesting. A little bit about me. My name is Rob Pyland. I'm the lead pastor at Brook Life Church in Maquonago. I am a transplant, so I am here from Missouri. So I came up here about 2 years ago and have been was down. Man, I was born and raised in Kansas City, and then for the last 15 years, I was in Columbia, Missouri. Which, if you know Missouri at all, you got Kansas City on one side, St. Louis on the other. I-70 runs right between them. Halfway between is where the Columbia is, and that's where I was. Town about 150,000 people. It went up by about 25, 30,000 people every time the school was in session or out of session. So it's a cool town. It'd be similar to Madison around here. It's got that kind of diversity and that kind of stuff. So it's been really cool to come up to Wisconsin, get used to this culture. I am married and I have three daughters. My wife and I've been married, wow, it's going to be 18 years. Wow, I'm getting old. 18 years. We've got three daughters. My oldest is 14. My middle one just turned 13 yesterday. And my youngest is 10. Right now, it's hard for me to keep track of because usually it's a 2 year spread. And right now, with my middle one changing too early, it's not going to be right until May. And then it'll be 15, 13, 11 where I can keep track of it and be a good dad. But love them. But man, I have got hormones raging in my house. So I should have done a talk on daughters, but I haven't figured it out yet. So I'll wait another 15 years. Basically, I'm just holding on for the ride, and there's certain times of the month where I just disappear. It's good stuff. I love what I get to do. The talk today is really sort of flows out of my heart because this concept of lead when you've got the title but not the qualifications. I don't know where you guys come from. I don't know what your worlds are like, but this seems to be my story. It's like keep getting put in spots where it's like, wow, I don't feel qualified for this. I don't feel like I know what I'm doing. I loved when I was early on in ministry, I read this from Andy Stanley, and then I heard a podcast where he talked about it and says, Andy Stanley says his being the leader of his church, his greatest achievement was getting there first. And by showing up first, then he got to hire the other people around him. And now he considers himself like, wow, I can't believe I get to be a part of this type thing. And what that goes to is even somebody as great as Andy Stanley, I mean, you probably have heard of him. You probably heard his sermons. You've probably seen a book. And yet that guy's going, wow, this thing's way bigger than I can comprehend. When I jumped into ministry, I went to school to be a teacher, secondary ed teacher. I was in love with that concept. I thought that'd be great, helping shape and fashion students' lives. And so I was cool with that. My brother was a preacher boy. I never wanted anything to do with that. And so I got to college, went thinking that's what I was going to do. And man, when I got done, God was like, it was only a year in. God said, no, teaching is great, great profession. There are a lot of great people that need to do that, but you weren't designed for that. You were designed to be a pastor. I argued with him for 3 years and then finally converted over in my junior year over to being the pastoral ministry. Just had to spend another extra year down there. But I remember, wow, I don't want to do this. I don't feel qualified. I don't feel like this is where I belong. God, you've got the wrong person, but all that arguing didn't get me anywhere, so I finally surrendered to it. Then I went to my first church, and straight out of college kid at a church. You've seen these guys on the pastoral staff. They're so green behind the ears. They don't know what they're doing. It cracked me up when parents would come in and ask me for parental counseling. I'm like, I don't even have a kid yet. Of course, at that point in time, I knew it all, so I could tell them, but I just so overwhelmed with the whole concept of it. And then somebody bought me this, Pastor Rob Pilant. And I was like, oh, I do not. I didn't put this on my desk for like a year. And they were like insulted that I didn't. I'm like, oh, well, it's not because I don't like the gift. It's because I don't want anybody to know to hold me that expectation of being a pastor. I'm like, people would come up and go, Pastor Rob. I'm like, please don't say that. Just say Rob. I get intimidated every time you say that. And here's the thing. I spent 7 years at that church growing and developing. And even when I was done, I didn't feel like I should be called a pastor. I'm like, this is too big for me. The weight here is just too huge. My next church I went to, I spent 7 years there too. I knew a little bit more about things, but then God does this thing where he likes to throw you in the deep end. And the church I was serving in Columbia, Missouri, was about half the size of the church I'm serving at now. And at the church I was serving there, I was serving as an associate pastor, not even the lead pastor. And God took me into this role, and I'm going, God, you had to make a mistake. It was one of those types of things, when you apply for it, you're going, you're never going to call me. And they called me. And then when you get that, it's just like, what do I do now? I shouldn't be here. I don't know how to do this. God, you messed up. And by the title, you knew what you were getting when you came in here, leading when you don't feel qualified. I'm assuming that you have had something similar happen in your world, or you're in something where you're like, I'm sitting in a position of leadership. I'm sitting in a position where people are expecting me to know the answers. And to be honest, I'm making it up as I go along. I'm just figuring out as we're going. And the good news about all this is I think this is the condition of most men on the planet. As we find ourselves in situations where we're leading or we're placed in positions of authority, and we're going, what do I do now? I got the title. I interviewed well or something. How do I go from here? And so just to get you guys talking a little bit, I would love it if one or two of you would be willing to share why you chose to come to this little talk today. If you'd be willing to share from your heart, that'd be great.
I share just because I've got the, you know, thing at work where I'm a senior software engineer.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I work with call center. My company writes call center systems, and our product line offering is vast. And there's times where it's like, I don't know everything, and you kind of expect yourself to know everything, and you get kind of like you have a little panic. And so that's why I kind of came to this class, is to kind of help me in, you know, there's a prayer life, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Is like, you know, I got the title senior software engineer when I applied for a position 8 years ago.
Mm.
I spent 3 years at that job, and then, you know, I moved down to another place just because of some things at that work.
Sure.
And I can do the job, but just senior just sounds intimidating.
It's scary, isn't it?
Because not to say that you weren't promoted into it, which, you know, you can do the head games with and all that, but just, you know, sometimes you feel like a senior and sometimes you don't. And it's just kind of like, you know, it's just, I think you just kind of set your own expectations, and it's like, why am I setting those expectations?
Yeah, you're expected to know the answers for sure. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. Anyone else wanting to share? Yeah.
I can see problems, say a curve before it happens.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's great. Any other? Take one more? Yeah.
Past congregation that I was at, I was on the Board of Education for 13 years, and I was chairman of the Board of Education when we started the school. And after that, we voted an elder. And I look at the Bible now, and I was not.
Absolutely.
And I didn't even think about those things until you asked this question. But right now I'm being put into a position to lead a small group of church. Yeah, it's like,
yeah, you know, I think this is the way that God works. If you come to a place where you're prepared for something, you're probably not the right person for it. It's like God is constantly stretching you and growing you and throwing you into the deep end. And so what I wanted to do was just take some Bible principles, because I'm a Bible guy. That's just how I work. And I want to take you to one of my favorite stories in the Bible, and that's the story of Gideon. And it's just a wonderful story. It's in Judges. And I want to walk you through with a guy who was overwhelmed by his situation, how he made it through it, and how, when we get to the end of the story, the epitaph on his story is amazing. And just, I just think it's beautiful, and I think there's a lot in here that we can learn if we're in a position, or when we come to a position where we're thrust into it, put in it, but we feel like, man, I am not ready for this. So that's what I'd like to show you. It starts out in Judges 6, verses 1 and 2. It says, again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. For 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in the mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. So you have to understand this situation. Basically, the whole book of Judges, it starts out, the first couple chapters starts out talking about how Joshua basically has brought them in. They've conquered everybody that had to. There's still some more places that need to be conquered, but the division of the land has been given, and so now go out and conquer the rest yourselves type thing. And they went through these periods that now after Joshua stepped down from being like a king type thing, it wasn't a king, but that's probably the nearest thing we could think of it, stepped down from that position. Now they're sort of on their own. And they're walking away from God. They're going down their own path. And God has been raising up these judges to step in, to turn things back around, and to sort of lead people through it. And he's been using some different people in the whole process. But we find ourselves now coming on this judge. They've been persecuted by the Midianites for 7 years. The Midianites are so oppressive to them and so obnoxiously mean that they will basically, the Midianites will come in, and a couple other people too, will come in when it's harvest season. They will sit down in the middle of their crops, ruin the crops, eat what they want, and make it where they basically, the Israelites have to stay in poverty. And that God has let this happen because the people of Israel have turned away from God. So this is sort of the situation we find ourselves in. The people are not following God. They're not pursuing God. They're not looking for God. In fact, we'll see that they're worshiping other people. And God has decided he's going to deliver them once again, and he's going to do it through this guy named Gideon. So then verse 11 is where we'll jump to. It says in verse 11, the angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite. Now, again, what just happened is the people have just cried out to God, God, save us, rescue us. This is horrible. We can't live this way any longer. And God says, I'm not going to do it. You guys have been messing around. You haven't been faithful. I'm not going to do it. But God, in his mercy, turns around and sends the angel of the Lord to this house belonging to Joash of Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Very strong phrase that you just want to hold on to, and it's going to go throughout this talk. And one of the most beautiful names for God, God with us, Emmanuel. I don't know if there's any more impressive thought is that God is with us. But this is what he declares to Gideon. Verse 13 said, but sir, Gideon replied, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian. The Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? But Lord, Gideon asked, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I have had time and time again when this happened in my life where I'm like, God, you chose the wrong one. I see some people who are qualified for this position. I see some people who should be here, but it's not me. And by the way, I know I'm a pastor, but I'm not just speaking here to positions that are pastoral. In your world, probably you are sitting in a position that God gave you because we believe that God is sovereign and God is overall and God is orchestrating the events. So the position you hold that you've been placed in was given to you by God. And you might be thinking, I don't know why they gave it to me. I don't know why they placed me here. But God is saying to you, go be strong, be mighty. I will be with you. So Gideon's sitting in this way. Verse 16, the Lord answered, I will be with you. And you will strike all the Midianites down together. Gideon replied, if now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me. Please do not go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you. Now Gideon goes off now, and he goes and he kills a goat, and he takes like half a bushel of barley or this seed they're talking about here, and brings about this huge unleavened bread loaf, sets it on a rock. He pours broth over it, puts it on there, and the angel of the Lord touches it with a staff, and it burns up, and then God disappears. And Gideon's like, whoa, that really was God. And it's just this amazing moment. But what I want you to see on that sheet I gave you, the first thing, then keys to succeeding when you're not qualified, is that it's okay to argue with God. It's okay to argue with God. I think this is a fully legitimate thing to have go on in your world when God has put you somewhere where you know you have no business being there. I think it's the true recognition of the weight of the responsibility you've been given. I look at this, I look at me. They don't equal. I can't do this. This is above me. And for God to put you there, I think this is the honest feeling and the honest conversation. And if there's anything I know about God, it's that he can handle honesty. He can handle truth, and he can handle our questioning. I think this is a sign that Gideon wasn't egotistical, that Gideon wasn't thinking more of himself than he was. He might have been thinking less of himself than he was, but he wasn't being prideful. To understand the weight of an endeavor is to understand its merit. I mean, think about the leadership positions probably most of us in this room have. Remember when you first held your child and the weight of picking up that baby? And I don't know about you guys. Maybe you guys were ready for that or not, but I wasn't. In fact, it wasn't even real to me till I was actually holding my first daughter. Up until that point, I knew my wife was getting bigger, but I really didn't comprehend that there was a life in there. And then when I'm holding this and I'm supposed to raise it and teach it, and it's a girl, I don't even know the first thing. I barely pulled off asking my wife to marry me, let alone know how they work. And here I'm supposed to raise, the weight is huge. I could mess up this life, and then I have two more. I don't understand this. God, why are you giving this to me? This is bigger than me. Or maybe it's this position where you've been put in a place where you're actually passing your knowledge down to other people, and you're going, wow, I barely understand it myself. How can I teach someone else? I'm just getting the principles in my head. Or maybe you've been given a position of authority, and you're actually not only instructing, but you're giving people orders. I mean, and maybe not militant, but you're like, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to get this done. And you're like, I'm not sure that was the right thing to say or not. Or maybe you're a boss. Like, you own a company or you're the boss position, and people are counting on you to feed their families. If you blow it, everybody suffers. It's a weight. It's huge. And because you're in here, I'm going to assume you feel my pain. I'm going, oh my goodness, I hope I don't make the wrong decision. And God, what are you doing giving me that kind of responsibility? See, I think this is an honest conversation with God when you have had something intense laid upon you. And I think there's nothing wrong with it. Some people get on Gideon for asking for a sign. I don't get on Gideon because I'm going, God, show me. God, why did you do this? Make sure I didn't blow it and accept something I shouldn't have. But here's the other side of it. When you're having this argument with God, you need to make sure that you always lose this argument with God. You can argue with God, but you got to let God win. When you get placed in something that's above your head, but you know God put you there, you got to let God win. You got to lose the argument. Then the next thing I want you to see is think in terms of one challenge at a time. This is in verse 25. Let's see, where does it pick up? That same night, oh, by the way, I got to tell you what he did. Oh, no, we're getting there. Sorry, got my brain going ahead of myself there for a second. That same night, the Lord said to him, take the second bull from your father's herd, the one 7 years old, or the prime one. Tear down your father's altar to Baal and cut down the Asherah pole inside it. Then build a proper kind of altar to the Lord your God on top of this height, using the wood of the Asherah pole that you cut down. Offer the second bull as a burnt offering. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord told him. But because he was afraid of his family and the men of the town, he did it at night rather than in the daytime. Now, again, I've heard people tell this story and they make fun of Gideon for doing it at night. But can you imagine what this must have been like to do what the God asked you to do here? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to your parents' church, okay, the one where they worship every Sunday. I want you to go tear it down, sacrifice a bull on the top of the offering of the altar you make, and burn it up. How many of you think that's a fun idea? that your family would be responsive, that your family would be loving and warm. And this is the family. This is the whole village. In fact, we see that the village approaches his dad, Joash, and goes, what are you going to do about this? This is your son. I mean, it's small town. Nobody's hiding that Gideon's the one who did it. And he goes, give us Gideon. We're going to kill him. And he's like, no, you can't come in here and do this. But can you imagine how big this must have been in that moment for him? Now, on the other side of it, we know, or I'll tell you in a minute, what he's going to be asked to do, and this is small in comparison, but when it comes to living life, you have to take the challenge that's right in front of you first, and you have to approach it, and you have to take it with all you have. God usually starts us off with a small task, but it sure doesn't seem that way at the time. Can you remember, some of you, the younger ones than you, maybe 6 months ago, or a year, or a couple years ago, when you had a challenge, and it was like big? But now you look back at it and you go, that was small potatoes. That was little stuff. And maybe for some of us who've got a couple of years on this, we look back 5 years or 10 years, and we're going, man, I wish I had that kind of decision to make, because that was the easy stuff. Can anybody relate to that, to like something you did? That anybody willing to tell a story of something you did a few years ago, and now you're going, wow, that wasn't big at all?
Sharing this knowledge with her. I didn't go back to school until I was 40.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working full-time, being in school full-time, three kids, mortgage. I had a couple things on. But she's, you know, cranking out about having to write a however many page paper or whatever, trying to tell her, Devin, you're going to look back on this in a year, when you're all done, and say, that was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, obviously, she doesn't grasp that, or didn't grasp that, but yeah, just trying to share that knowledge with you. Get through it. Everybody gets through it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, but can you, and that's absolutely true. I'm dealing with my oldest daughter right now. She's in relationship issues. Now, she's not allowed to date. I don't allow her to date, so she can't date anybody, but she still likes guys. And she's got this guy that she likes, and so they've been starting this sort of date. I sent them off to a Christian camp retreat for the weekend, and they come back in love. And so it's, what in the world?
The receipt.
I'm like, I need a refund. And so I've got her coming, and she goes, he hasn't texted me in 12 hours. Is it okay for me to text him again? I'm like, if you want to come off needy. And she goes, but what? She goes, and so I'm trying to teach her these relationship issues. And now they're like, in hindsight, I'm married 18 years. I don't have those kind of issues. But she's dealing with it in her reality at that moment. In 10 years from now, she's going to go, I was so dumb back then, or that was so small. But in that moment, it's huge. It's big. It's a mountaintop thing. And can you imagine taking on the challenges you are facing now 15 years ago? Probably no. I know I can't. The stuff I'm dealing with now, holy cow, I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know they had these kind of problems. I didn't know people were dealing with stuff. I had this smaller view on the world. And that's what's so important when you're dealing with following where God has placed you, is you can't think of the stuff that's coming around the corner too far, because it'll overwhelm your mind. What if questions? What if we go back into a recession? What if this employee doesn't turn out? What if this hire doesn't go well? These things that you have no grasp. I was about last year this time, I inherited at the church this plan that we were going to be buying our building this month. But this has been put in plan 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I'm like, okay, so we have to buy the building. How much money do we have saved? Oh, crap. So we have to get down payments and money. I've never done fundraising in my life. That was not something either of my previous churches had done. And I'm going to have to raise funds for this. Well, I have no clue. And the money in my small mind seemed insurmountable. How do you come up with this? After all, the last guy left, and attendance dropped down a little bit, and the giving, some of those people were the big givers. So now how am I going to find new givers just to make budget, let alone having more than budget? And I mean, I was overwhelmed. But the thing that I had to do was I had to focus on the moment. And let's go, okay, what do I got to do now? All right, first I got to figure out what it means to fundraise. I read, I don't know, 15 books on the fundraising topic. And then the concept of sitting down across from somebody and go, hey, we're building a building so we can reach people for God. Can you give me money? Is there a more awkward conversation in the world that you can have? And so I had to get used to this kind of thinking, and it was huge for me. And it took these baby steps, and I just couldn't be thinking too far of it's coming, it's coming. And even 2 months ago, we're going, how much money do we have for the down payment? 10,000. How much do we need? 300 grand. Oh, boy. And yet, 2 days ago, we signed the papers and we own a building. So, I mean, it's just when you think about it or you're in that moment, you got to stay where you're at. And you really got to focus on that. Yes, if you're a business owner, if you're a planner, you got to be thinking long term, but you can't let that stuff control you. You got to fight the battles that are in front of you. So think in terms of one challenge at a time. Trust God for the now stuff. Stay in the present. The future will blow your mind if you start trying to take on all those challenges. The next thing, doubting yourself is part of it. Chapter 6, verse 33, it said, says, now all the Midianites and Amalekites and the other eastern people joined forces and crossed over the Jordan and camped in the valley of Jezreel. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, summoning the Abizrites to follow him. He sent messengers through Manasseh, calling them to arms, and also into Asher and Zebulun and Naphtali, so that they too went up to meet with him. Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you have promised, look, I will place a wool. So I'm jumping ahead in myself there a little bit. Gideon has finally got it. He's on board with God. He's tackling it. We took down the Asherah poles. I survived. Everything's going good. And he's taken on this challenge. And all of a sudden, now he's gone out. He's felt the presence of the Lord. He takes his trumpet, which would have been one of these guys, which is a horn of an ibex. And this thing makes a lot of noise when someone else blows it. When I blow it, it just sounds like farting noises. It's this great thing. He blows his trumpet. He announces to everybody, we're going to take out the Midianites. We're going to take them out. You guys gather together. We're going to have an army. Let's charge this thing. And then immediately that night, he's going, God, are we sure we can do this? I need a little bit of confirmation here. I just announced to everybody, we're going to war, but I'm not sure that was the right decision. And so he goes, he said, I'm going to put my fleece, my wool fleece, on the threshing floor. And if there's dew only on the fleece and the ground is dry, then I'll believe you sent me. I believe this is what we're supposed to do. So he wakes up the next day. What happens? The fleece is wet, the ground is dry. He goes, well, God, let's try this again just to make sure I'm getting this correct. Let's have the fleece be dry and the ground be wet. And he wakes up the next day and it is. And then he moves on. This is something that's really important. Doubting yourself is part of leading. You're going to find yourself in a position where you're going to take a stand, where you believe it's the right direction. You got your counsel. You talked with people. You did your investigation. You make the announcement. And then that night, you can't sleep. Because I'm like, I don't know if that was where I was supposed to go or not. Did I do all my homework? Did I get this straight? Did I go down the right path? And here's what I want to tell you as a leader. It's okay to pause. In fact, it's wise to pause here. It's wise to say, God, am I doing the right thing? And again, I know I'm talking in spiritual terms, and many of you aren't. Is anybody in here a pastor? No, good. It means I can say what I want. No, I'm just kidding. We're dealing in these realms. We have to believe our calling in the world is a calling of God. And if we're dealing with making decisions, it's going to have impact on people. The way we do what we do impacts people. And so to make a wise decision, to lead our business down a direction, to lead our group of people, to lead our family, to lead our friends down a path, when you take that step, and it's a big one, it's a step of faith, it is not unrealistic to come to a place where you're going, I don't know if that was right or not. And when you do, it's a great time to pause and go, God, am I getting this right? God, am I taking the next step? I've heard people make fun of Gideon for this. I think this is right on. I've heard people say, don't test God. I don't think this was a test. I think this was a confirmation. I'm about to lead basically about 30,000 people against over 100,000 people. God, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? When it comes in our world, when you start getting this feeling, stop for a second. Pause. Go back. Re-examine what's happened in your world. What led you to the place of this decision? What counsel have you had? What do things say? What's going on? Reconfirm it. If you have friends, hey, here's where we're going. I made this statement. Because here's the thing. If you put pause here, and you found out new information in the process, maybe even when you made the announcement, things come in, you can still pull this baby back. But as soon as you go into war, you ain't pulling that back. So this is a great time to confirm what's going on. So don't take the doubt as this negative. Take it as an opportunity to grow. And this is true in my life. There have been times when I've come to this point where I hit the pause button and God told me to stop. I thought I was heading the right direction. I thought I was going the right place, but more information came in and God took me a different direction. When I went to school to be a teacher, that was legitimate. I felt God called. I was following his path. I got counsel from good people. But when it came to the place where I was actually executing that, I knew God had said, that was what I wanted you to think. That's where I wanted you to go. That's the heart you needed to have to get you to this place. Now I'm taking you a different direction. The only way you can figure out if that is true is by honoring the doubting and praying through it, working through it, pausing. Don't see it as weakness. But then if you go through, your counselor say yes, that this is where you're supposed to go, then you don't stop. You keep going. This is a pause to come back to see, is this right? Are we going the right direction? Is this the way we should be doing it? Doubting is part of it. It's just something essential. Next, be prepared for it to get worse before it gets better. Be prepared for it to get worse before it gets better. This is verse 7, or chapter 7, verse 1. It said, early in the morning, Jerubbaal, who's Jerubbaal? Well, Jerubbaal is Gideon. What happened is Gideon, when he had done the whole building, the altar out of the Asherah poles and put the bull on top of it and sacrificed it, people of the village came and said, give us Gideon. Joash, Gideon's dad, said no. And Joash said, hey, if Baal can't stand up for himself, then why are you fighting for Baal? And so they said, well, that makes sense. If he can't fight for himself, then what good is it? So they started calling Gideon Jerubbaal, or the contender with Baal. That's where the name came from. And all his men camped at the spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Morah. The Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men for me to deliver Midian into their hands. Too many men. Okay, they have over 100,000. We have 30. Too many. Okay, God. And so he says, in order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her, announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left while 10,000 remained. Now 10,000 are taking on 100,000, but God's not done. But the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many men. Take them down to the water and I will sift them for you there. If I say this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, separate those who lap the water. And so you'll find that some of them would reach down or would be on all fours and like drink out, and some would drink out their hands. Only keep the ones that drink out their hands, which equals 300 men. So now Gideon is taking 300 men against over 100,000 Midianites. This is nuts. And I don't know how many of you have been in this situation, but I think it's probably more than we want to recognize, where you start a project, you think you have it figured out, you feel it's God's will, you've even doubted yourself, but you've come forth, and almost instantly, as you're entering into it, something hammers you that you were not expecting. It's like out of nowhere, you didn't see it coming, some obstacles, somebody quits, some financial thing happens, 2008 happens, something happens and it completely cripples the direction you're going. And you're going, I know this was a God thing. I know I had God's direction on this. I know this was the right step to take. And now, what am I supposed to do? Sometimes it was definitely the case for Gideon. Gideon wanted to keep Or God wanted to keep Gideon dependent on him. Leaders, guys, it is so easy for us to get caught up in ourselves. And on the one hand, we know we're in over our head, but on the other hand, there are times when we think we got it all figured out. We've read the books, we have the leadership principles, we've done all the conferences, we've got all the counsel, but it's so easy to leave God out of the picture. We haven't prayed about it, we haven't asked God's direction, and we can jump ahead without him. Gideon might have gone, you know what, I only have 30,000 people, but I can set up an ambush, I can do this strategy here, we can come around, we lead them through this valley, everything will be grand. But he didn't have God in the middle of it, he might have. But for our purposes, have you kept God in the middle of how you do your business, of how you lead? Are you trusting in him? See, principles are great. Leadership principles are great. Leadership principles are wonderful. But God is what runs the world. He's what holds it together. And we must stay dependent on him. So sometimes God will make our situations worse before he makes them better. And I can tell you this has happened just about every time in my life. God wants to make sure I don't get pride, so he pops my bubble on a regular basis and keeps me humble and dependent. Keep moving, though, in chapter 7, verse 9, it says, during that night, the Lord said to Gideon, get up and go down against the camp, because I am going to give it into your hands. If you are afraid to attack, 300 against 100,000, maybe a little afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Pura and listen to what they are saying. Afterward, you will be encouraged to attack the camp. So he and Pura, his servant, went down to the outposts of the camp. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sands of the seashore. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. I had a dream, he was saying. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed. His friend responded, this can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. See, believe that God is working behind the scenes. Believe that he has control. I mean, first question here is, when did Gideon become a mighty warrior? The only thing we know about Gideon is he's hiding in a wine press, making barley or grinding wheat. When has that been a courageous act, when you're hiding in a wine press? I just got back from Israel like 3 weeks ago. Over there, they had these wine presses, and they would put them in these caves because it kept it cool and it kept everything. It's like hidden. The reason he's in there is because he didn't want his wheat to be stolen, so he was hiding so he'd have enough to feed his family. He's a coward. Which I don't blame him. I mean, they've been overrun and everything. But he's not this strong, mighty warrior. When did he become a strong, mighty warrior? Not yet. It hasn't happened. And yet this was what believed by the people. God was on his side, working on his behalf, and was going to deliver it. God didn't need a bunch of people. He needed one man who was going to follow his lead. When we stay dependent on what God is doing, that he has to be in the center of it. You see, God sends us little confidence boosters. I've been in the middle of this stuff. I've had things fall apart and the craziness. And sometimes I go to the Bible and God speaks through the Word of God to me. And that's a wonderful moment. And then there's other times when the Holy Spirit just gives me comfort. 99% of the time, God works through people. And there'll be someone in my life who comes around me and goes, Rob, you just got to trust God. You got to be there. I'll pray with you. I'll be here for you through this. And I'll walk with you. I can't help but wonder if Pura is not a really good friend to Gideon and walks with him through this. Whatever it is, God comes in your world at the right time when you need him and will pick you up. But you gotta lean into him. Sure enough, Gideon leads this war. The 300 guys, they take the trumpet. Everybody's got a trumpet in one hand. They got a clay pot in the other, and held inside the clay pot's a torch. They go up on the top of the hill, 300 of them around the edge of it. They blow the trumpet, toss the pot on the ground and crash it and start waving their torches. And when the Midianites see it, they freak out because they're already paranoid. They're already terrified. They start killing one another. The 300 men chase whatever is left of those people fighting all through the night, all through the next several days until they kill them all and run them out of the area. In the epitaph of Gideon goes like this. In chapter 8, verse 22, it says, the Israelites said to Gideon, rule over us, you and your son and your grandson, because you have saved us out of the hand of Midian. But Gideon told him, I will not rule over you, nor will my son rule over you. The Lord will rule over you. Gideon had these moments where he could have taken and gotten prideful, but through it all, he stayed dependent on God. Through it all, God stayed with him. And in the end, when everybody's going, you took 300 guys against the whole Midianite thing. You need to rule and reign over us. He's going, nothing doing. The only reason that happens is because God's in power. We must remain humble as men of God in leadership, knowing that God can set us up or God can take us down. We have what we have because it's been given to us. And it's a stewardship. It's a responsibility. If we start taking credit for things that are not ours, we better watch out. Goes on to say in verse 28, thus Midian was subdued before the Israelites and did not raise its head again. During Gideon's lifetime, the land enjoyed peace for 40 years. What a wonderful thing to have as the epitaph on your, basically your tombstone or on your life. Is it, man, he was humble, he was a guy, but he was a mighty warrior. Why? Because he trusted God. He leaned into God. He did what God said. And then at the end of his life, he gave God the credit. A wonderful, wonderful thought. It's just these keys to succeeding when you're not qualified, just some practical things. Stay dependent on God. Don't think you have arrived. Just because you're reaping success right now and you're on the high side, don't get cocky. It's a very bad place to get. Don't get cocky. You haven't. If you are to become what God has designed you to become, you have to stay connected to the power supply. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, not all of them being prideful, but have told me about how they had everything. Their business was successful. Their life was going grand. And then just something hit their world, and it totally took everything out. It can be a death in the family. It can be a turn in the market. It can be who knows what. You got to stay dependent on God. You got to trust in him. And that's not guaranteeing success for your business or that kind of thing. But if you have God as your foundation piece, as what you're holding on to and not you, when everything falls apart, you can go back to God. You might not be able to give. You're not going to be able to give yourself the answers you need. The other thing, find people who can support you in your leadership. You need good people around you. Pura was there for him when he went down there. You got to find some good people in your world. Guys, we need good guys in our world who will speak truth into our world. Now, I have really three qualifications for good men in my world. One is I have to like them. It's really hard to really trust or be there for somebody if you don't like them. You just need to be able to hang around with them, enjoy them. That's the first one. Second is you have to trust them. Some people it's fun to watch a football game with, fun to go to a football game with, but you just know that whatever you tell them is going to be public. And so you have to keep those relationships out. This needs to be a person you can trust. You like them, you like hanging out with them, you like spending time with them, but you know what happens or what you say to them is going to stay between the two of you. If you're asking for counsel on the business, you're asking for counsel with your family, man, you can tell them anything and you know it's staying right there. The third is that they are headed in the same direction that you are. Meaning, they are not seeing themselves as the answer, they are seeing God as the answer. They are pursuing God with their life. Because if you have a person who's pursuing life or the success of themselves and you're going for the success of God, your decisions do not look the same. You will make different decisions. If it's all about me, then I'll step on as many people as possible to get what I want. But if it's about God, then loving people is actually more important than actually being successful in the business. So you have to have someone who's going in the same direction. You have to like them, you have to trust them, and they have to be going thing. That's where we get that verse in 2 Corinthians that talks about not being unequally yoked with unbelievers. The whole concept is you can't partner with somebody who's heading in different directions. That whole unequally yoked, we're going in the same way. You need those kind of people in your life. And then whatever God has called you to lead, do it in a way that honors God. If you're in a business, if you're in your family, whatever your situation where you have leadership ability, do it in a way that honors God. Where at the end of the day, you can go, God, we might not have made money this year, but I know you'd be proud of how this went. I know you would see this and you would be proud of it. It's just, every one of us is going to stand before God one day. And I believe the question we're going to be asked is, what'd you do with what I gave you? What'd you do with what I gave you? And based on our response, it'll be either well done or that's disappointing. And I don't want to be the one that God's disappointed in. I mean, I already know that I'm not going to be able to stand before him and say, I'm perfect. I already know that I'm not going to be, hey, I'm here because I earned it. I didn't earn any of it. But you blessed me. You have been so good to me. And I took what you've given to me, and I tried to do my best with what you gave me so I could present it back to you as a thank you. Then God's in charge. We aren't. No matter what we are leading, we must always be following his lead. Always. His principles trump leadership principles. By the way, most of the time, they get along great. Leadership principles and God's principles tie in very well. I've seen very few of them that don't go together. But if it comes down to leadership says this, or the market says this, and God says this, you go with God every time, because he is the ultimate leader of our lives. See, the beauty that comes if men of God will lead in the many realms God has given us responsibility for in this way is just, wow, what a difference we could make in this world. If we displayed real love for people, real love for God in the way we handle things, I can't even comprehend it. You guys have an opportunity that I don't. God called me basically out of the world to equip people to go into the world. That's as a pastor, that's my responsibility. You will talk to people, you will influence people, you will lead people that I'll never even get a conversation with until after you've already won them over. And so this is an opportunity for you to shine brightly, to make a difference, for people to see the authenticity of you, the humility of you, and the dependence you have on a higher power. Them calling it a higher power. You're calling it my Savior, my God, my leader. What amazing things could happen in our world if this became true, if people saw this in us and we became this beacon of hope. God's kingdom truly could take up residence here, and he could be seen clearly. So I've left a little bit of time for questions if anybody has them. Any comments, questions, or snide remarks? Did I not give it? Sorry. The epitaph of Gideon? Yes.
The whole thing with arguing with God, show me, is that your feelings, right?
And probably. It is a show me state, and our animal in Missouri, our state animal, is the mule, stubborn as a mule. So, yes, that's how I roll, and the whole Jacob wrestling with God thing, I think I've done that. Yeah. I lost, though. Yeah. Any other questions? All right. Well, then I will pray and we'll be done for today. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you for today. I thank you for this opportunity to gather together with these men. Lord, I thank you for the influence you've given each one of them. And I pray that you would take and you would just allow them to humbly place their lives in your hands, to trust you as their leader. Because, Lord, I believe, and I know it's true, you can do so much through each of their lives, not just in a business, not just in a family, although those are both amazing things, but you can do so much greatness in the lives of people throughout this world. And people desperately need you. And you have chosen to use us as the mechanism through which this world finds hope, finds grace, finds truth, finds life, finds you. And so, Lord, I pray that we would not take this responsibility lightly. Yes, we are unqualified. But with you, we have the strength and we can do all things through you. We love you. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Thanks, guys. Oh, thanks.